Karen Robinson with LIS Limited Edition, brought to you by the School of Information Science and Learning Technologies at the University of Missouri-Columbia. With us during this segment is Paul White, the former director of the Mid-Continent Public Library in Kansas City. Paul, we are so glad to have you with us today.
I'm pleased to be here today.
As part of MLINK's 25th anniversary oral history series, we are interviewing various people who were involved with the Missouri Library Network Corporation in the early years. Again, it's been around for 25 years, and so we're talking to people who were involved in the early years of MLINK. Paul, can you tell us a little bit about your early involvement with MLINK? How did you first get on board?
I got on board like most of the other people when it was finally decided to establish it. Why, we contributed money and became member and started participating. I actually have worked with MLINK the entire 25 years, or their first 25 years.
Wow.
I retired in May of 2006.
Congratulations.
And I was the last charter member to leave the MLINK board at that time.
How wonderful. Well, you did mention that you were one of the first libraries to pay and get involved. What did that entail, and why were you one of the brave ones who decided to jump on board with MLINK early on?
I was at the time I joined, I was director of Kinderhook Regional Library, a mid-sized rural library.
And that was in Lebanon, Missouri?
In Lebanon, Missouri, uh-huh.
Okay.
And we were not directly receiving OCLC services. We were receiving them indirectly through a cataloging cooperative down in the southwest part of the state. At that time, it was obvious the benefits that were going to be available through the National Bibliographic Database and the implications for automating libraries and so forth. So while I wasn't a member, my materials were being cataloged through OCLC, and I felt like this was the proper course of action to undertake.
I've heard from some other early pioneers of MLINK that there were some libraries that sort of dragged their feet getting on board with MLINK, but that was not a problem with your library?
No. Primarily, I had been involved with, I mentioned the cataloging cooperative. Actually, there were two in the state of Missouri that serviced academic, public. Believe there were any specials that I'm aware of. Maybe there were in the other cataloging cooperative. But the introduction of the OCLC services cataloging module sort of gave us the death knell for those cataloging cooperatives, because we no longer needed to ship books to a secondary site and then go through all of the routine of approved invoices and reshipping of the books and so forth. I think in both cases, we, before the cataloging cooperatives were met their final demise, we worked on ways to have our cataloging done and card production done through OCLC, and then left the cooperatives to do the book card, book pocket production. And all of those items were mailed to the library, and they got there about the same time the books did, so service was speeded up. But it also meant that a lot more of the work could be done at the individual library, and the economics came into play at that time.
It made a huge difference, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what position did you hold with MLINK in the early years? And talk to us about what other positions that you held with MLINK through the years.
Well, I've been on board most on the executive board most of the time. I've held positions as secretary and treasurer of the organization. I held other positions throughout the state at the same time. I was president of this cataloging cooperative for a number of years until its demise, and I was involved with another cooperative project, the Missouri Libraries Film Cooperative, as president of that. So
you stayed busy.
Yes, I did manage to keep keep from getting bored.
So you held these various positions with MLINK over the 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so your role was primarily serving as a board member?
Yes,
And now let me ask this. You started out with the Kinderhook Regional Library in Lebanon, and that library was a charter member of MLINK. When you moved to different libraries after that, were each of those libraries already members of MLINK?
Yes, they were. Actually, I only had one move. I moved to the Mid-Continent Library.
Okay.
I went as assistant director, and this was one of the larger libraries in the state, and they, too, were a charter member and you know, were receiving OCLC or using OCLC services at the time they joined MLINK. They were involved in both an automation project and a building program, and so I came on board to look after the automation portion of it. And John Ferguson was the director at the time, and he also was on the board of MLINK. When I joined, he said, "You take that one on, and I'll work after some other ones." And so I just continued on the board, only changed representation to Mid-Continent.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, did you find that being involved with these other Missouri Library Associations, did it benefit you in any way as you served on the board of MLINK or vice versa?
Well, the whole landscape of libraries were in a state of flux at that point. The state library, through using federal funds, had established regional networks, and they had accomplished by that time pretty much the coverage of the whole state. About the only weak area was the northeastern counties of the state.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these were done primarily to support interlibrary loan, but as in Missouri, each network sort of went its own way. So some not only did the interlibrary loan, but worked on continuing education. Others attempted some cooperative purchasing kind of things for their various library members.
I see.
And so this scene was already set. As we looked at the networks and saw that they were going different directions, we thought maybe there was a need to have some kind of overall coordination or direction. So there was a group established, statewide coverage, called the Missouri Libraries Network.
Oh.
And its function was to coordinate the various activities of the networks, and if a continuing education program in one network seemed especially good, why, they referred it to the other, and the idea of cooperating and purchasing that would be statewide, thought there might be a little more buying power, this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So this went into existence. At the same time, we had the situation where Missouri was being served by OCLC through two different networks.
Oh, that is confusing.
On the western part of the state, the libraries received their services from BCR, the Bibliographic Center for Research, out of Denver.
Uh-huh.
And on the eastern part of the state, they were receiving their services from MiddleNet, which served portions of several states.
Was that MiddleNet was like the Midwest United States?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
As Missourians tend to do, why they each felt that their choice was the best.
of course.
I think that the primary driving force there was telecommunications costs. And, you know, most of the time, in those early days, it was based just on miles from service point. And so people on the eastern state had better rates from middle net, and the people on the western part of the state had better rates from VCR. So that was going on. At the same time, this other coordinating of networks was going on. And I think the members on that Missouri Library Network decided we really ought to continue unifying and strengthening our ties here in Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
And there seemed to be a general feeling that overcame the divisiveness that we would be better if we could work as a single state in dealing with brokerage of OCLC.
Very good.
So that pretty much was the driving force for the formation of M-Link. And again, when M-Link was finally formed by the various members kicking in their donation and formulating the network, why, we actually acquired our first director, who was at the time the director of the MiddleNet.
Interesting.
That was Mary Ann Mercanti.
Oh, okay. Very interesting. Well, with M-Link, what, in those early days, what were some of the biggest obstacles that had to be overcome?
Well, I think that the OCLC brokerage, because we still were faced with the problem that the way it was being set up, that the telecommunications cost were would be coming out of Ohio, and
mm-hmm.
There would still be an inequality. So the necessity to balance those telecommunications costs so that everybody sort of paid an equal amount, and then the need to formulate a membership fee that would, again, be more reflective of usage and productivity had to be formulated. And I'm not sure that we've ever got that quite right. We've gone back to it and visited that element of the organization a number of times and tweaked it and refined it a little bit. But we seem to have come up with something that was fair enough to be beneficial to most of the members.
So essentially, and correct me if I'm wrong, that one of the challenges that the founders of M-Link saw that the organization could help solve were these technology challenges, pricing, the fact that there was more than one cooperative in the state and such like that?
Yes, I think this was the idea of unifying wherever we could, and we continued to keep those other elements into it too, continue education that would be available throughout the state rather than just regionally or locally, and the idea of collective purchasing. You know, at the outset, it was things like 3M tattletapes. And,
I remember those days.
And library supplies, processing supplies, this kind of thing. And that's carried over to currently. Now we are doing collective purchasing of electronic databases and making them available again to the members at a reduced price or a common price.
Very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Very helpful indeed. Well, what do you feel was the most surprising part of the process?
Well, by the mid-80s to the 90s, I was sort of moving into this treasurer's role, and this cooperative purchasing I was just talking about, M-Link stumbled onto almost a dealership for CD-ROMs just at the time that CD-ROMs were suddenly going to solve all the problems of the world. I mean, they were such a impressive storage device, and all of the vendors began to bring out products on the CD-ROM.
Yes.
And so M-Link went into the business of making those available, first of all, to their members,
mm-hmm.
and it got very successful. In fact, they started making money hand over fist.
Wow.
And then it went beyond, there was no limitation that it had to be in Missouri, so we were providing CD-ROMs throughout the country.
Oh, my. Okay.
And so,
interesting.
As all things happen, when a nonprofit organization suddenly starts making money hand over fist, we came to the attention of the IRS.
Oh, how interesting.
And they said, you know, for a nonprofit, you sure are making an awful lot of profits.
Whoa.
And, you know, we really couldn't deny that. So we thought we need to retain that nonprofit status, but we need to come up with some vehicle or device to handle this profit-making wing that had suddenly grown with M-Link. So we undertook the establishment of a for-profit subsidiary of M-Link. And if anyone has ever worked with getting 401c3 status, they know that there's an awful lot of paperwork and work involved. But I'll guarantee you that going for a for-profit subsidiary of a nonprofit organization multiplies the paperwork tenfold.
I can only imagine.
And so we undertook this, and after a couple of years and a great deal of advice from lawyers, we were able to establish this for-profit subsidiary. It was named Access Information Solutions, and the CD-ROM sales, as well as additional peripherals that had we'd begun to market, all went under this organization. And about the time we got all of this tied up with a neat bow, technology moved on, and there we were.
And now this was during the late 1980s?
Yeah, late 1980s, early in early 90s. And,
okay.
Suddenly, a CD-ROM was just another storage device, but they were going bigger and better with other other technologies. Through the 90s, we maintained Access Information Solutions, and eventually got to the point where it really wasn't necessary. It held some funds for us, weren't making money hand over fist again. We were just staying within our budgets.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't close it down. Access Information Solutions is still out there.
Wonderful.
As a for-profit subsidiary, in the event that another one of those windfall opportunities comes along, we will be set up to to have that and not run afoul of the IRS. And one of the other side benefits is that there are, I'm not sure where we are at this point, but there are tax credits with that subsidiary that M-Link is still able to take advantage of when filing their tax returns through the years.
Well, it sounds like you were very innovative.
Well,
very innovative.
Missourians have always been very innovative with coming up with solutions to things. I mentioned the film cooperative.
Yes.
This was another one of those innovative things where none of the small libraries could afford to have a collection of 16-millimeter films. But by banding together, they were able to purchase these and create a circuit that all of the members were able to supply these throughout the entire state, not just the big libraries that had the money to do it.
That is wonderful. Well, can you tell us about some of the key players in those early years of M-Link? And if you have time, describe some of their roles in the formation of M-Link.
Well, I suppose that the Missouri State Library has to be considered a key player in the development of M-Link.
Mm-hmm.
They oftentimes have sort of stood on the sidelines and encouraged development when they couldn't directly work with it because of the restrictions of state government and so forth.
Right.
As I said, the those networks I first described, the regional networks, those were supplemented with federal funds administered by the state library.
Okay.
And the Missouri Library Network Board, that interim organization, again, received grants. The state library was aware of the problems of the telecommunications with OCLC. They were also looking forward to a statewide database and saw the value of keeping tapes of OCLC catalog material for various libraries throughout the state. Now, they didn't, they, like everybody else, weren't too aware of technology. So all of those tapes they kept, they didn't continue to refresh them and maintain them. So when they got to the point of people wanting to use those tapes for new automation systems, they found they were pretty much useless. So
oh, dear.
We always learn as time goes on. But at least, you know, the state library was, well, they had some of their own objectives. They were continuing to watch the developments to encourage the development of the M-Link as the OCLC broker, and were actually, if I recall right, the state librarian was an ex officio member of the M-Link board in the early years.
Okay, that's good.
And so there was a deep involvement, and you know, they were concerned and aware and worked with those people that were working to establish M-Link.
I see.
The value of the state library has continued through the years because M-Link and state library worked very closely together. And when the movement to digitize so many of our images and other material, the state library was very enthusiastic, and working with M-Link, they were able to get the Virtually Missouri website and the training sessions for various libraries, museums, archives to digitize their material.
A wonderful project.
And again, that was a collaborative project, and the M-Link took the lead on it. The a lot of the seed money and was provided through federal funds through the state library and with contracts with M-Link. So, you know, they have always remained a major player throughout all whatever develops in the
So they were a key player then in the development and ongoing cooperation with M-Link, it sounds like.
Yes, it was.
Well, we have just a little bit of time left, but before we close, is there anything else that you'd like to share with us and with the listeners as you reflect on your time at M-Link?
Well, the people on the board were a very dedicated group of people.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them had their own libraries to run and their own problems to solve. So I think probably the thing that needs to be said here is that we have been very fortunate in the staff that we have been able to acquire for the day-to-day operations of the Missouri Library Network Corporations. As I said, we were able to get Mary Ann Mercanti as our first executive director, and when she moved on to other pursuits, we were able to get Susan Singleton, and following Susan was Tracy Byerly.
Yes.
And each of these people have had their own, brought their own knowledge, especially the technology. They had foresight to help with the development and things like the digitization, this kind of thing. They always seemed to keep their eye on the big picture, They were able to find ways to work with the state library.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been very fortunate in the executive directors, and that part carried on over into all of the staff. We've had long-term staff members, each with their own proficiencies and dedication far beyond 9-to-5 day.
I can imagine.
So I think that the thing that has made it so successful has been a combination of a dedicated board and a very dedicated staff.
Well, and it sounds like each executive director has put their own signature or stamp on the development of M-Link for the time frame that they were there.
You have it right.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. White, for sharing all of this with us. It's been so insightful and very interesting to hear about the early years of M-Link, and we thank you very much for the time that you've given us here on LIS Limited Edition.
Well, thank you. It's been very enjoyable.
And this is Karen Robinson. Thank you for listening to LIS Limited Edition, brought to you by the School of Information Science and Learning Technologies at the University of Missouri-Columbia.